in it foggy outside. All the planes have been grounded. Ain't the fire inside? Let's all go stand around it.
Funny, I've been there, and you've been here. We ain't had no time to drink that beer.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sandman Podcast. We are coming to you live from beautiful Havertown, Pennsylvania. I am joined today, as always, by our resident hack checker, Oliver Fullington, our producer and co-host, El Hilo del Hack, Tyler Fullington, and the hardcore icon himself, the Sandman. Hack, what's going on?
What up? Yo, Ollie's now technical director, too, because he sets us all up right now. So
he's
checker and technical director of our podcast.
Wow, technical director of operations and hack checker, Oliver Fullington. Wow.
I'm begging to get a Pat McAfee clap from you guys right there.
I'm sorry. No clap.
What are you trying to steal their thing? I'm not being part of that.
Yeah, we're our own thing, man. Come on, man. I'm not riding the coattails of that guy.
Pat's a huge Sandman fan.
Okay. All right. Well, he's right about that one. Guys, I don't know about you, man. I had such a great night the other night. We all went out. Hack was a special judge for Delilah's Entertainer of the Year contest, along with the legendary Todd Gordon at Delilah's for their Entertainer of the Year contest. It certainly was a great night out, and man, what a really fun night, Ty.
Yeah, it was something. It was a little bit more elaborate than I expected. I mean, Entertainer of the Year, I thought, you know, there was going to be, you know, some, you know, a little bit bigger than your normal, you know, performances, but they had props, they had stage crew.
Dude, it was the Mummers Parade at a strip club.
Yeah.
It kind of was. That's like the best way I could describe it.
Yeah, for those of you not in the Philadelphia area, the Mummers Parade is a yearly tradition where they put a lot of work into their outfits and routines. That certainly was the case at the Delilah's Entertainer of the Year contest, man. These girls went all out, and they really put on the show.
A quick little hack check, but this one's easy. Ty and Oliver's mom was in an Entertainer of the Year contest at the same exact place on the same exact stage, like, let's say 97-ish, 98-ish.
Did she win at least?
Oh, I don't even know. I didn't vote for her. I mean, come on. I wasn't even going to judge
her. I mean, if I'm going to find out, dude, that she was in an Entertainer of the Year, she better have at least won.
Dude, you got to understand, back in the days, you know who the bouncers were? The Pitbulls and the Big Show.
Wow. Man.
Yeah, I came in there because I was on the road a lot, and the Big Show, he's like, dude, I want you to train me. I'm like, dude, I'm on the road a lot right now, you know, and I have no place to train you. 2 months later, he's in WCW.
Wow.
So, getting thrown off a building by Hogan in that ridiculous thing that they did.
So the Big Show reached out to you originally to get trained for wrestling.
Well, not really reached out. I just happened to go into the strip club where he's like, yo, Sam it. You know what I mean?
Wow. All right. I never knew that one. That's certainly interesting.
Yeah, so I knew Paul like since way, way, way.
Shout out to the Big Show.
Yo, shout out to the Big Show, Paul White. Mm-hmm. All right.
And the Pitbulls.
Yeah, and the Pitbulls. Absolutely.
They ran Philly back then.
Okay.
No, literally, the Pitbulls ran Philly, dude. Anywhere you went, they knew every single bouncer. And if you knew the bouncers, you knew the heartbeat of any bar, anywhere, you know?
Well, we certainly
that place.
We got over with the bouncers at Delilah's, too. Greg, shouts out to Greg, who was running things, big dog.
Mm-hmm.
And you know who else runs Philly is Todd Gordon, man. I want to say shouts out to Todd Gordon. It was the first time I've ever had the opportunity to meet Todd. I certainly was marking out for Todd Gordon. But,
yeah, his eyes were lit up like a pumpkin watching this in the performance.
Not as bad as Monty, but that's a friend of ours. Looks like a jack-o'-lantern anytime a stripper gets near him.
Well, Todd was marking out. We were upstairs watching you guys as you guys were judging the competition. And Todd, for the one girl who came out with the alien routine, she put a glow stick around his head, and we're just watching from upstairs, which was kind of like the eagle's nest or gorilla position, and we're just dying laughing at this glow stick on his head.
Dude,
it was the only thing we could
notice. The only reason he got it on his head was to entertain us.
Well, he certainly
and that's why he kept it on his head, and so I think I'd pull. I'm like, dude, this is too ridiculous.
He certainly popped the boys in the back with that one.
You sure
yeah,
did.
Yeah, that
sure
was a Chris Candido pop.
Yeah.
That's a, dude, Candido used to go out there. Well, like, his whole match was like kind of to pop the boys in the back. It was hilarious.
Well, you guys were marking out for that one. That was certainly an interesting night. Definitely want to give a shout out to Todd Gordon. If you guys haven't had the opportunity yet to pick up his book, sold everywhere where books are sold, is Todd is God. Definitely take your opportunity to pick that book up. It's certainly a really interesting memoir on his times in the business. And if you're going to be in town for WrestleMania weekend, and you're looking to buy a little timepiece or some jewelry for a loved
one. 10th and Samson, baby. Stop it. Carver W. Reed. It is literally, Philadelphia is known for like Liberty Bell and stuff like that, but also Jewelers Row. Todd's grandfather was the first jeweler ever on Jewelers Row. Carver W. Reed.
Yeah, Carver W. Reed. Absolutely check it out. And if you guys are in town for WrestleMania weekend and you're looking to hit up a gentleman's club, you can do no better than going to Delilah's. So,
yeah, don't think about any of the other ones, dude. If you're going anywhere, go to Delilah's.
Right.
Yep. All beautiful women.
All beautiful women. They are fantastic entertainers. And, yeah, definitely shouts out to our new friend of the show, the real Malik Joe.
Malik.
Malik.
Malik, what's up?
What's up, Malik? That was certainly really awesome. So when I got there, you were sitting at a table with Todd and Malik was rocking a DX jersey. And yeah, it's just kind of fate that we got to meet Malik that night, and certainly was really cool.
No, dude, crazy kind of fate. With me, Todd, and my sons, we were, weren't you at the table then when the girl that had his, God, I wish
I arrived a little bit later.
Okay, so she's like, yeah, I want you guys to come over to this booth or whatever. I'm sitting in the booth. She brought Malik over. And I thought Malik was a fan. Well, he is a huge fan, you know what I mean? But I didn't know how it was going to turn out, how huge of a fan he really is, you know what I mean? So I think we're going to take some pictures, and he's got these belts and stuff. So I'm like, I slide over, and I tell him to sit in between me and Todd. The girl walks away, and I'm just sitting there. I'm like, yo, dude, so how'd you end up here? And that, and that's how everything started with Malik.
And so what did he say?
Well, he went into his whole thing. I'm an influencer, this and this. Show me everything on his phone.
Yeah. So immediately you found out he wasn't a fan. He was actually also judging the contest as well.
And no, I didn't realize that until we went downstairs even.
Because
we hadn't even talked about that. I'm sure we were talking about wrestling and stuff like that. You know what I mean? And he's an influencer. Obviously, I want to know him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he's a huge wrestling fan. I mean, it's a marriage made in heaven right there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like kumbaya. You know what I'm saying?
Seriously. So we were, we kind of tried to sneak our way down. Ty, Oliver, myself. You guys were sitting like front row on the stage, and there was a chair next to Todd, and I kind of weaseled my way in there, sitting next to Todd. He was getting a massage.
Were you on his left for the first couple dancers?
No, the first dancer didn't come out yet, so I was sitting next to Todd, and I'm trying to take a selfie with you and Todd. I'm probably the only person in the world who almost got kicked out of a strip club ever for trying to take a picture with Todd Gordon.
Oh, no. Dude, I know that rule more than anybody on the planet. You don't take a picture.
But I wasn't taking a picture at all on the stage. I was look, I was literally trying to get a selfie with you and Todd. You were breaking my stones. You were saying, oh, you look so cute tonight. Because every time
oh, my God.
Every time I hang out over here, I'm rocking
you
sweatpants
and a hat. You
would have
came in like fifth or sixth. Dude, if you would have went up there and got jiggy with it, I'd have voted for you.
Yeah, you were breaking me and Todd's stones for actually dressing up for the occasion. Look the part, be the part, you know? So the bouncer almost kicks me out for trying to take a picture. And I'm like, all right, I'm not taking a picture of the girls. I'm not doing that. I just wanted a picture with Todd and Hack. And then another lady comes by about a minute later and is like, you can't sit here. This is only for the judges. So I get up, and then Ty, you kind of tried sitting there.
Yeah, I mean, I saw my opening, so I thought I would try and take it. But then immediately she comes over. Now you can't sit here.
So you get booted, and then I'm standing over to the side with Oliver. And we're talking, and I guess, Oliver, you kind of like threw your hand up a little bit, and you knocked out the chain.
What, was he raising the roof?
I don't know
what. I wasn't raising the roof. I was just making a movement, stepping, turning around, looking around like any normal human does, and just so happened, a waitress with a plate of chicken fingers and ketchup walking behind me smacked them right out of her hand.
It was a real blown spot.
Damn, go to chicken fingers.
We had to immediately make a move. I said to Oliver, let's do a lap right now. We got to get out of here. We need to move.
Listen, not the first time and not the last time the chicken fingers were flying in there.
You probably should have given her like $10 right then. Sorry.
She ran away.
She's got to go to a customer that's got to wait another 8 minutes to redo that order.
You know what
happened? Unless she just scooped them up like John Taffer would have done and just gave them, dude.
Shut it down!
I love you to say that at the same time. It's hilarious.
So, yeah, absolutely. You know what, Hack? You make a good point there. We should have actually taken care of the girl. That was a fault on our part there. Definitely, congrats to all the women who competed. I know that
my girl, of course, won. Your girl won.
Your girl won with the Barbie routine. So,
Barbie! Oh my God, Barbie! Dude, that girl was so hot.
Down boy. Yeah.
Wow, that girl was hot.
Wow!
Shout out to Barbie.
Shout out to Barbie.
There was her. And you know the girl that like fell down and like slammed right in front of me and Todd.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I look her in the face. And I'm like, "You're doing great. Keep going, honey."
She was doing a devil gimmick.
She was good looking too. And I'm not like a black hair girl or whatever. You know what I mean? But usually I go right to the bottom. But that girl was probably the second best good looking. Oh, and her body was like killer.
Yeah, they were all fantastic. Great job. Congratulations to those who placed. Certainly a really awesome night, and I enjoyed hanging out with all you guys and Todd, so really awesome time. We're covering WCW Uncensored.
Wait, you're blowing through a little bit. How much? What'd you spend your last $76 on? I remember we're getting into the Uber. You go, Hack, I'm not leaving yet. I got $76 in my pocket.
I didn't spend another dollar in the club.
Is that right?
I tipped the bartender probably another 20. I had two drinks with our boy, DJ Vic.
Shout out to DJ Vic,
friend of Rob Van Dam, which we found out that night. And
that's right.
And his personal ECW Mount Rushmore was Taz, RVD, Sabu, and yourself. So that was his Mount Rushmore that he gave
us. Well, obviously, he's very intelligent.
Yeah, he knows what's what. So, DJ Vic, it was nice hanging with him. 30-year vet in the business.
Host of the Entertainer of the Year.
A great host of the Entertainer of the Year. And, I had a good time chopping it up with him. I didn't spend any money.
That was him, DJ. You say DJ Vic.
He had the buffer jacket on with the sparkle, all that.
The bow tie.
Yeah. Nah, yeah, he was a really cool dude. Definitely,
he could take lessons from me when I hosted the Hawaiian Tropics Finals on the planet in Jacksonville, Florida.
Oh yeah, I'm sure you were a great host.
Oh dude,
blonde number two.
There was literally like 75 Tidos the picture.
You sure you weren't naked, jump roping on the stage?
Man, that was the week before.
All right, so I will put up on the account later the photo. It's you with, I want to say, maybe like 40 or 50 Hawaiian Tropic models, as well as Billy Kidman and also Disco Inferno. You guys were the judges of the Hawaiian Tropic contest. We're going to throw that on social media.
But not on stage right there with us is Conan, Rey Mysterio, Psychosis. Maybe Silver King, you know what I mean? We rolled. That was our group. Like, that's how we rolled back then.
Okay, that's
for that summer.
That's who you're hanging with. That summer in '99 in WCW.
Wow,
what a time! What a time! So we are talking about WCW in 1999. This was a pay-per-view coming from Louisville, Kentucky. Big house that night. I think, Hack, I was talking to you before the show here. I think this is probably the biggest show that you ever worked crowded in front of up until this
point. We're working uncensored here in 1999. Yes. I just wanted to clue the people in on that are listening that we're working uncensored here.
Yes, uncensored 1999. That is the show that we watched and we're reviewing this week. He's dying right now. He's cracking. He popped himself with that one.
I could never be a comedian, dude. I would go on stage, tell my first good joke. I'd be on the floor laughing, cracking up. They get that. What's that hook that they would use at the Apollo?
It was
Apollo
the Sandman.
Theater.
It was the Sandman at the Apollo. Yeah. That was
That's
his name.
Hilarious. Yes. The Sandman would hook me in like 3 minutes. Boom, I'd be gone.
That's a program.
Like, no, dude, you can't be a comedian.
How apropos.
Yeah, how apropos. This was coming to you live from Louisville, Kentucky in 1999. They had a giant crowd of 15,000 in the arena. Heck, was that the largest building you ever worked in front of at that point?
I would think probably. Unless Japan.
Okay. Freedom Hall, right?
Freedom Hall. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but I would say probably, but you know me.
Okay. So the opener of the show, this was certainly really awesome, just incredible match. You can almost turn this show on if you guys are watching and stop right here. No, I'm kidding. You want to watch the Hack match as well. But Billy Kidman defended the WCW Cruiserweight Championship against friend of the show, Mikey Whipwreck. What an incredible opener this was. Mikey just went all out in this match.
Dude, I mean, both of them did. You know what I mean? And a little backstory is, and I'll get into my three-way later, but Billy knew, Billy was good. Like, Billy, like, I'll put him right on the line as, like, Booker. Like, they held Booker back, until Booker just got so over they had to go with him. And that's really the way the industry went with him. Billy, he wasn't a big dude right then, because you got to remember, everybody, that's the reason why I started doing the juice. I did it for like 6, 7, 8 months of my life, but I got big because I was leaving ECW, going to CW, because everybody there is huge. Billy's this little guy, but that can work like Okada right now, or like... who's my other favorite up there?
Osprey.
Yeah. You know what I mean? He was equal to those guys then, you know what I mean? In America, not saying, but Billy could have been that over in Japan, but he was not happy about being opening match for his work rate.
Right.
You know what I mean?
It's as top of the company as it gets.
He knows how he's working with Mikey, and it's kind of like, yo, let's go out there and steal the show.
Yeah, and they
literally
did. They really,
because I was with Mike, he's like talking to me about it. he's like yo Billy's like, Billy wants to steal the show. He's like, do I want to do that my first match in here? Kind of like that, you know what I mean? And I don't blame him. The match was unbelievable. I just watched it a couple hours ago. But yes, Billy was trying to make a point there. The expense was at Mikey, because Mikey only worked maybe 10, 15 matches after that, maybe another pay-per-view. But really, but either way, neither one of them got bigger than that anyway. And even if Mikey didn't have such a great match, it probably wouldn't have changed, because the company was dead and done less than a year after that. Yeah. They were done by like May the next year, or it was just like March or whatever.
They were still around until early 2001. So about 2 years from now is when they actually went done. But 1999 was certainly the point where the wheels really started to come off of the company, and they were hemorrhaging losses at this point. And
like 70 million or something.
You can speak to the dysfunction backstage a little bit as well, in terms of like putting together
matches. I did already, dude. Yeah. It was like I literally would go to Dusty Rhodes. They put me in Bammer and maybe some with Raven or whatever. But originally, I would go to Dusty. Like, I started, I've said this story before, Vince, everybody was, I think both companies were doing 3 hours. So I would start at the 9 o'clock hour for WCW when Vince was talking to Stone Cold or talking to Cactus or talking to The Rock. So Nash is like, hey, let's put a hardcore match on there. And they kept us there for like 2 months.
Yeah, I believe Nitro at the time was going 3 hours. They had the hour up going at 8 o'clock.
Yeah, I was
going
to say 8 to 11, and then Raw started at 9.
9.
Raw started at 9 and would always have like a 10, 15 minute overrun.
Hey, they still do it now. Yeah, you know what I mean? The Rock could go out there and do 37 minutes for him to open. If not him, it'll be Cody. If not him, it'll be Seth. You know what I'm saying? That's just how they do their show.
Yeah. But back to the Mikey Kidman match. I mean, I love this. Bobby Heenan on the call kept calling him Shipwreck, but man, was he putting him over.
Well, he got that from Terry Funk, because Bobby had watched our stuff, and literally Terry Funk thought Mikey's name was Shipwreck for like 6 weeks until he started working with him.
Really?
Yeah, he called him on a pay-per-view, like Paul's like, cut a promo about Mikey, and then he called him Shipwreck, and we're all just busting up laughing, watch him do it, and Paul loved it.
Okay.
Paul thought it was the greatest thing ever, and it is pretty funny.
Yeah, no, I mean, the announcers really put Mikey over as a newcomer.
Oh, dude.
Tanay was given a little background on him without actually saying the letters ECW. He was putting him over as a competitor for 4 or 5 years in the business, and that was really awesome to see. And Bobby Heenan was like, I really like this guy. And like they were putting him over. I know Bobby and Tony and Mike, a lot of times they get a lot of slack from fans for some of their commentary when WCW's dying days, but in listening to this pay-per-view, they were really putting over the product and doing a really good job announcing overall on the show, I thought. So this match was really good. Kidman was selling the knee. Mikey hit this amazing top rope belly-to-back suplex that just dumped Kidman right on his head. And then he made the mistake of trying to powerbomb Billy Kidman. You never can powerbomb Billy Kidman in a match. He always reverses it. Billy hit a perfect shooting star press for the finish. I thought it was a great match. I would go, you know, 4, 4 1/4, maybe 4.5 stars on the match. Definitely, if you guys have never had the opportunity to check out this match, I would implore everybody listening out there, check out this match. These two guys just absolutely killed it, left it all in the ring. Go out of your way to watch this if you never have.
Last point is that it's funny that those guys did that match then, but now you could put on AEW and see that as an opening match.
Yes.
Like right now. And the next match is like that, and the next match is like that, you know? But cards used to be built differently than what as the old guys are looking at. Don't go out and outshine all of us.
Yeah. Now, and I will say, too, with that match, you could put that match on any show today, and it would not look out of place. And a lot of times when you're going back,
at all.
Yeah, and a lot of times when you're going back watching old wrestling, there's certain times where you're not able to hold up the test of time. But that match certainly, no doubt, could.
Yeah, ask Duke the Dumpster Drosy if he lasts the test of time. I mean, just off there's another million guys. Salvatore's tier. Salvatore's. I mean, there's a million of them.
Yeah. Well, shouts out to Mikey and Billy Kidman.
They just can't pass that test for probably the rest of time. I mean, what's the next step of wrestling?
Yeah, I don't know where it's going to go.
You know what I mean?
Well, no, history always repeats itself, so you would think it's got to come back somewhere at some point, you know?
Yeah, maybe it goes a little bit slower again.
I don't know. That'll be perfect.
Yeah, it's time for the comeback.
Yeah.
Next match on the card was Stevie Ray and Vincent in a Harlem street fight. This was a battle for the NWO Black and White, man. I think if anything describes the NWO at this point, it's this match. So leading up to this match, they had splintered the NWO into the Wolfpack, which was kind of all the main event talent, and then the B-Team Black and White, which was the Hollywood NWO, and this crew was weak. I mean, you got Horace Hogan, you got Vincent, you got Scott Norton, you got Stevie Ray, Brian Adams. It was just a bunch of jobbers, kind of, and I don't know. This match was really weak. I thought it was weak crowd brawling. The crowd was kind of into it, I guess, but there's nothing spectacular or memorable at all about this match. Hack, I don't know what
it was set up for failure.
Yeah, it kind of was, honestly. And, you know, for those of you who don't know, Uncensored is set up as a pay-per-view where WCW is kind of a lot of gimmick matches every year. So they were kind of, you know, it's a little bit different if you're watching the show wondering, why is everything in this match, pay-per-view, a gimmick match? Well, that's kind of what Uncensored did. It was kind of like their hardcore show a bit. But this was some weak brawling. The finish itself was pretty weak, where you had Horace Hogan running in, where he throws the slapjack in the ring. And that was all she wrote. Less said, the better about this one. I didn't really care for it. I don't know about you guys.
Very well said, Tosh.
I can't really add anything on it. This match didn't do anything for me, and I think it was probably after watching the Mikey match, maybe a bathroom break for people at the show.
Well, yeah, like you said, after Mikey and Kidman tear the house down, there's not much. You can only really go down from that point.
There's nobody in the building that expected a good match there.
Yeah. Any interactions or memories of Stevie Ray and Vincent of your time in WCW?
No, I never really spent any time with Stevie Ray.
Okay.
And Vincent.
Next up on the show was Kevin Nash and Rey Mysterio Jr. Just to give a little background on this match, Ray had pinned Nash a few weeks prior on a WCW Nitro. He got a pinfall victory over him, kind of like a banana peel pin. The crowd did go nuts for Ray getting a win over Kevin Nash. And then afterwards, he was doing a giant killer gimmick. He did have wins over Bam Bam Bigelow, Scott Norton, and a pinfall victory over Buff Bagwell. So they were starting to push Ray a little bit. They had taken the mask off him at the pay-per-view before, where Conan and Ray lost to Nash and Luger. That unmasked Ray, and certainly was a business mistake, in my opinion, that WWE course-corrected by putting him back in a mask when he went to WWE in 2002. I don't know. The crowd was really into this match. They were feeling Ray, even though he was unmasked. But, yeah, I don't know how you guys felt about this one. Hack, what were your thoughts watching this match?
I don't know. I like seeing Ray in the ring with Nash, even though it was Nash's idea, I'm pretty sure, to unmask Ray. Ray was not happy about it at all.
You were talking to him at the
time. Not happy about it at all.
Yeah, I can imagine not being happy. I mean,
no, dude, that's his whole life. You have to understand, you're a luchador. Getting unmasked is like the worst possible thing that could happen to you.
Yeah, and if guys do typically get unmasked, it's usually built up over a giant event. It's a long blood feud. A lot of times in Lucha where, you know, guys are, you know, losing their masks after years and years and years. And to take it off Ray like that, it was kind of a weird booking decision.
Yeah, I mean, heck, don't you think Nash would have known that? Like about...
All right, you got to think about it like this. If Nash is like, listen, I'm this big, huge monster, and I want to do this little, big guy, little guy promo, can I really do it with him in a mask? Or do I take the mask off that little baby-faced looking motherfucker, you know what I'm saying? And then that will work more for him in the long run. Nash was the booker. Nash made that decision, I'm pretty damn sure.
Oh, I know. I'm just saying, like, as big as that, yeah, like you said, like the luchador thing is, like, as big as
who
that
knows,
is. Like,
maybe, you know. Maybe somebody could have had an axe to grind with somebody. I'd be right. Like, yeah, take this bitch. I'm going to pull the mask off this dude. Shit like that happens.
Yeah, I don't know. It always seems strange to me, too, because as like a merchandising element, if you wanted to sell stuff, selling masks is like a great opportunity to sell merch in the merch stand.
Right.
And certainly WWE.
Didn't they put the strap on Ray?
No, not
they never WCW. Put it on him?
No, not in WCW. The only belts he won in WCW were the tag and the cruiserweight title.
Yeah, I was going to say the cruiserweight.
Yeah. So this match was, the crowd was pretty into it. Nash did sell a bunch in this match. He did sell a bunch after getting low blowed.
Low blow, getting his ass into the corner, taking the Bronco Buster. Yeah.
Yeah, he was selling for Ray. Luger trips up Ray, leaving to a giant big boot. And then Nash dropped the straps to booze, hit the jackknife for the 1-2-3. I don't know. There was nothing special about the work in this match. And then
the jackknife was good as he throws Ray, kind of.
Yeah.
It's not like a sit-down power bomb. It's kind of like, I'm 6'11". Let me just pick you up and toss you across the ring.
Yeah, I always enjoyed watching Nash work with some of the lighter weight guys. He certainly had some of the best matches.
He's good base.
Yes.
He knows what to be bases.
Yes. This program and everything with Ray, it didn't really do a lot for Ray's career. Ray won the cruiserweight title the next night from Billy Kidman. And
I'm not so sure that it didn't do something for Ray. I don't think it hurt Ray's career.
Well,
where else were you going with Ray at that point also?
Yeah, but I don't even know why you do the program. You take the mask off the guy and...
Well, because there was crazy booking crap going on up there then.
Yeah.
Who knows what powwow was happening when that idea came across.
Yeah, Nash was right back into the main event.
He could have been in a sweat lodge somewhere in Arizona Nash, Bischoff, Kevin.
Who knows? Who knows? So Nash was back into the main event scene after this, and this side quest in his career was over. Ray won the Cruiserweight title from Kidman the next night, and kind of relegated back into that division. So that was that match kind of forgettable for what it was. Next, we saw a pre-match promo package. Raven, yourself, and Bam Bam Bigelow. This was a pretty good little promo package, and you caned yourself a couple times, Hack, leading up to this. Any memories about doing the pre-tape or anything like that?
Dude, I must have fast-forwarded. I must have fast-forwarded through it.
Oh, okay.
Did it show us the week before, like with the limo?
Yes.
Okay, yes. So I know it in my head.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they charged us for that thing. So... like, well, I don't know when you were getting your checks or whatever, but I find out, like, all of us, me, Bigelow, and Raven, they charged all of us, like, $3,500 for the damage to the limo. And I talked to Bammer about this, and Bammer was like, no, that is not, because we met up, and he goes, he didn't even know it yet. You know what I mean? I was like, yo, Bammer, you know they charged me like $3,500 for it. They had the bill broken down and everything. Bammer was like, no, that's not happening. Next thing I know, it was squashed.
Okay, so for those, to give some context on this.
Literally, that's how it went.
Hack, Raven, and Bam Bam had a three-way the week before on a Nitro.
Nobody gave us the office to do what we did.
You guys had a Nitro match that went to a no contest. And ended with you guys brawling in the limousine area and you were getting slammed on the limousine.
I took a backdrop onto it, I think, maybe.
Yeah, you got slammed onto the limousine, and it was pretty
good. Yeah, that was good stuff.
Yeah, it was good stuff. It was a pretty good brawl and everything, and I can't believe I can't believe those guys hemorrhaging $75 million were trying to charge you $3,000 for that.
That's probably why. But they rescinded it. That's all I know.
All right, so good for you for fighting those charges.
No, that wasn't me. That was totally Bammer.
All right, shouts out.
He looks right at me. He goes, that is not happening.
Shouts out to Bam Bam the veteran making sure that $3,000 charge was not applied to you guys there. Next up on the show was Jerry Flynn versus Sonny Ono and Ernest the Cat Miller in a handicap match.
Man. Ooh, ah,
What a, just this match stunk, I thought. So Bobby, the best part about this match.
Was Sonny.
What I liked about this match was Bobby Heenan on the commentary asking,
he's
minutes
hilarious.
Into the match, is Sonny involved in the match? And that basically sums up 1999 WCW. What the heck was this match? I kind of like Jerry Flynn. I think he's a pretty good worker, a little bit, you know, doing that shoot style gimmick like I do.
Dude. It was booked for disaster, even worse than freaking Booker and Stevie Ray's match. Neither one of them knows how to wrestle.
Yeah, nah, it was.
You can't put two guys that don't know how to wrestle in the ring against you. Wait, it was three guys.
you got Sonny Ono
as
well.
You have nobody. Sonny was probably smarter than either one of those two combined right then.
Yeah.
If they would have let Sonny like call it, they probably would have got through it.
Where was the cohesion in that match? Who was booking this?
Well, if you think about it, like, what year was this again?
1999.
All right, where was MMA then right there?
It was still, I mean, so it was getting a little big,
okay,
but it
so
wasn't
could
popular.
Could have this been Eric Bischoff shot at, like, hey, let me try these guys, trying to find another avenue for his wrestling company, you know what I'm saying? I could see that.
So Bischoff was a big karate fan.
Yes, of course.
You know, he did a little karate competitions. Sonny Ono and Ernest the Cat Miller, similar background, and Jerry Flynn, obviously a little bit of a shoot style background as well. So yeah, maybe that was the kind of the case, but don't, if you're doing that, you have to present it as like almost like a worked shoot, like very serious.
Right, yeah, right.
And you can't have it be a handicap match. Do you know what I mean? Like if you're going to try to,
unless he beats the shit out of both of them in like 30 seconds.
Right. Something like that then.
They can't work.
Right.
Nobody in the ring can work.
Yeah, this was another, I mean, just nothing special at all.
All right, quick little story.
All right.
So this is May.
It was March.
All right.
So, might have been the next week. Okay. Or we might have been in spring break in Panama City.
Okay.
Goldberg beats me. But earlier, it was when the ring was hovered over a pool.
Yes, Club Villa.
Earlier in that day, we were over, because shit's hitting the fan there in Panama City. You know what I mean? It's like crazy, crazy. So we're all in this big bar next door judging some contest or something. I look back, and Jerry's getting a blowjob from a girl on stage. What?
At the bar?
Dude, on stage, like, you could, anybody, if they really wanted to look, you just gotta, there's like a half a circle of women right there that are in the contest, you know what I mean? Jerry grabs one of them, sits down in her seat, next thing you know, she's blowing him.
All right.
Was he even a judge?
No, he was fired like less than 24 hours later.
I was going to say, well, I could see the girl trying to get in with the judges. You know what I'm saying? You got to do what you got to do. But wow. he's not even a judge.
Dude, I was like, wow, this is that's one of the times I was like, wow, dude, are you stupid?
It takes a lot for you to say wow.
Dude, seriously. It was the pills. It was the pills, dude. Those were the pill days. He wasn't even a drinker, I don't remember.
Okay.
I think it was all pills.
Man, well, Jerry Flynn.
Yeah, they're getting a blowjob. Dude, there's a couple thousand people. Man, this is spring break. Couple thousand crazy kids in the audience right here. You're on a big stage getting a blowjob.
You can't be doing this.
I mean, that's spring break, baby.
Yeah, he was done after that.
Next up on the show was your match, Hack. This was the three-way.
Yeah, I'm God.
Yeah, I'm God. Listen, put himself over. We're going to put you over a bunch here, man. This was a three-way with Raven and Bam Bam Bigelow. Obviously, you guys all are very familiar with working with one another over the years. This match was really fun, I thought. I enjoyed this one. I don't know about you, Oliver.
I mean, yeah, if you love hardcore matches, it's fun. You know, it has everything that you want.
For a plunder match, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, first glance, me rewatching it again from when I saw it as a kid, I mean, sloppy,
yeah.
of course. But, I mean, that's what comes with it. You could tell 98% of it was off the cuff.
Yeah, yeah. But, no, I mean, you're getting what, yeah, that's what you're getting with.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, that's what you're getting with it. I mean, my favorite part of the match is nobody's putting their hands up, taking any shots.
Yeah.
I mean, look. Bam Bam did one time when Hack hit him with the fan.
Yeah, I was disappointed in.
Yeah.
So, just to recap this match.
No, but that fan would have busted the top of his dome open. Just think about it. That plastic fan, and if you notice, right before that, he went to hit it with me, and he was waiting for me to cut him off, and he like held on for a second. I kicked him, the fan dropped, he went into the corner.
Well, he kind of hit you with it, but he kind of threw it over your head a little bit. Yeah.
So, and I remember him telling me afterwards, he's like, "Go after that fan spot, I was in the corner." He goes, "I thought you were going to plaster me with it."
At the early point in the match, Bam Bam Bigelow breaks an oar over you, and you make this giant scream.
The greatest sell ever. What? That was a Ric Flair. You know what I mean?
You screamed so loud when that oar hit you. If you're rewatching this match, guys, definitely take notice of that point.
I thought the double trash can bump was better.
I love it. Yeah. From the head
to the face bump in the trash can. That was a great bump.
So you want to hit? All right, here we go. So these are Hack stats from watching the match twice this afternoon.
Oh, God.
Here we go.
Now. Shots that you gotta understand, like a cookie sheet to me, that's on my shot list, but that, like, you don't even feel a cookie sheet, you know what I mean? So between cookie sheets and like the ironing board, you don't feel the ironing board really that much.
Sure.
There was,
yeah, you don't feel
one, two, three, four, five. I took five. These are all right to the head. Now other shots that are shots with other stuff like that one cookie sheet, the ones that are bigger, those things are thick. So that's like taking a shot, something like that, and then other things. And then the four chair shots at the end were just like unbelievable.
Okay, so I was talking to you before the show a little bit about the chair shots. And you were kind of explaining some of the thought process involved in taking a chair shot. Do you want to walk me through that again, Hack?
All right, now it's all right. Anybody that's listening, I want you to act like you're playing musical chairs, okay? Now, when you go to sit down, we're not talking about your ass. Imagine where your back is, like your shoulders are at the top of the chair, and in the middle of your back, the chair is concave at that point right there. It's like circular. So when you shut the chair up, you have the part that your ass sits on against that rim that's concave towards, well, no, it would be convex then coming down towards your head. So when you're taking a chair shot, you don't want to be hit by that part that supports your lower back. You want to be hit by the part that your ass sits on, no matter how hard it hurts, because if you get hit by that rim that supports the bottom of your back, you end up with like 20 stitches in your head.
Yeah, it's sticking out. So, yeah, you want to kind of get into it, and you don't want to get hit with the end of it. It's basically the end of the chair. No,
that will bust you open.
No, it happened to Cody Rhodes in AEW.
Exactly.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Busted him up pretty good.
Now, you guys did a lot of really cool spots in this match for a Plunder Hardcore match.
Stiff table bump.
Oh, so you take a power bomb from Bam Bam on the table.
Yeah.
Those tables.
All right, you guys, you got. All right, here we go.
Quick joke.
We talked about how Billy Kidman wanted to make a point in that match. He knew he could tear the house down. He knew he had a good chance of stealing the show. We were talking beforehand. And now me and Bammer and Raven are there. We're like, because we're into our, like we've been doing our stuff for like maybe 2 months or whatever, whatever it was, 3 weeks, whatever. We got it, but Bammer was always like, dude, we don't want anybody else to think that we could do this stuff. You know what I mean? So we need to make a point. It was Bammer that brought it up to me, and I agree with him totally. He goes, we need to make a point in this match that it's going to be so damn good, and we're going to prove to everybody else that thinks they could do this in the locker room that they can't. And you can't. So that's why... All did you know how many spots were done outside the ring?
I don't remember any, honestly.
For a reason.
Well, besides, yeah,
was
besides
there any
Cassidy
blood in
whatever,
the match?
Right. Yeah.
How much? What
was there any blood in the match?
No blood.
Was there always wreckage all over the place in the ring?
Yes.
Yes.
All three of those things were made exactly that way when we were putting together the match. That's how we wanted it. It's not a shoot you in, duck this, reverse this. No, no, no. It's supposed to be like a street fight. It's not supposed to be pretty. If you slip on something, you slip on something. You know what I mean? We went out there with the opening, which lasted about probably like 10 to 15 seconds. And we went out there with the end. And the end started when I Frankensteinered Scotty off the top rope. That was the beginning of the end.
So all that being said, we were talking about the tables. I mean, was there...
So I knew the tables were that stiff. We all do. We all knew. And we liked it. Raven's like, oh, no, I don't want to go through with one of those tables because they were stiff. And me and Bam were like, no, this is great. So they're not like so flimsy, you like touch them and they like explode.
Right.
I didn't know that because when Bammer hit me off the top rope with the powerbomb, he hit me over the legs of the table.
Yeah.
If he would have hit me over the center, we probably wouldn't have broke it. And then the crowd popped huge when he went on top of me. So the table got credibility, and then Bammer got credibility. And then we do a spot afterwards where I set the table up in the corner, I shoot Bammer in. Dude weighs 450 pounds, hits the table, and barely even bends the damn thing.
Yeah, it was another stuff.
Dude, those tables were stiff.
Yeah.
Yeah, if Bammer's hitting that table running full speed
right,
shot from the corner.
He knew he was trying to break it.
Right.
And he thought he could break it easily, or he would have ran harder if he would have known.
Yeah.
Yeah, that thing didn't snap at all.
It's hilarious.
It's like a Japanese table.
Oh, dude, don't even get me on having to hacks all those things.
I thought the work in this was like, you know, really fun plunder match. You know, it wasn't,
dude,
look, it's not
all
scientific.
Off the cuff. The whole thing is just off the cuff, prove to the boys that nobody else could do this shit.
So. I wanted to ask Hack, when you
get... And Bammer would be to me, just say, no, he's like, dude, he goes, I know you'd never get hurt. If I got hurt, I was breaking a bone in the business, he goes. But usually I go through one of them things, like with Sabu or Dam or whatever. I'm not like the injury-prone guy. He goes, dude, start selling something in the fucking back, please. No, he's trying to protect what we're doing, and I totally got it. You know what I'm saying? I'm
like sell for the boys and about right.
Well, everybody.
That way you ensure your spot. Yeah, it makes sense.
And then exactly what Bama thought, they started introducing other guys. Here comes Knobs. Knobs, the first day in the locker room, he goes, "Hey, we're working tonight. The only reason I'm here is because of Hogan." Literally, the first sentence out of his mouth. Swear to God.
We're going to have to talk about Nasty Knobs at one point here on the show because...
What a character.
What a character, but also what a stiff worker back then in 1999. So I do want to know, were you guys inspired by the Royal Rumble spot with Mankind and The Rock for the spot where your hands are duct taped behind your back? I was very reminiscent of the Royal
Rumble. No, I had done that. We had done that before with handcuffs.
Okay, so
that had been done before.
Okay,
so we stole that from somebody in the 70s with handcuffs, probably out of UWF or something.
Okay, all right, yeah. No, I didn't know if like
the Rumble. I'm sure that Pab, you would have thought that would have happened, right?
Yeah, I didn't know if that was like inspired by the Rumble, which was just 2 months before.
Well, that was Scotty's idea.
Okay, so there was the issue of the tape ripping a little bit, but you did about as good a job as possible.
Who cares? He's bending a metal chair over my dome, dude. Right. Just look at the chair after each shot.
Yeah, no, I can't imagine. So, like, after taking those chair shots, is your bell ringing? Like, can you walk us through that at all? Like,
no. No, dude, there's been maybe, like, you know, breaking my neck, that, like, a little blackout. The other time, I dreamt of a spot for Sabu, but he's like, no, I'm not taking that spot. I'm like, God damn it, now I got to do it. With the ladder in the middle of the ring, you know, the belt's hanging above. The idea is, it's a 12-foot ladder. I'm up on, like, the top two. When I dreamt of it, he was up there and I was pushing him over through the tables on the outside. He's like, no, that's the only time Sabu has ever told me I ain't doing that spot. So then I had to do it. I do the bump. I remember waking up with Fonzie smacking me in the face.
To the outside of the ring. Yeah. To the outside of the ring, you're saying, take a bump.
From there in the center of the ring all the way to the floor on a big freaking teeter-totter. Oh, man. Fonzie's waking me up. Hey, Daddy. You there, Daddy?
Well, that's an insane spot.
Hilarious stuff.
But nothing in this match where that gave you like a head ring.
No, even those four chair shots, dude. I've been in matches with Balls Mahoney where he's hit me with 20 of them.
Okay, so reading the Observer before the show, Dave Meltzer said he's hardcore. He probably won't be able to count to 10 by the age of 60. Hack, you're 60 years old right now. Can you count to 10?
I don't know. Am I 60?
All right. I'm pretty sure.
All right, Dave.
Way to show him.
Yeah. Yeah, I showed you, Dave. I made it to 60.
Yeah. Yeah, Dave. Yeah, come on, man. Lay off. He can listen. I've heard him count to 100. He can, Dave. Let me tell you. But that the match was fun. Bigelow hit Raven with the greetings from Asbury Park. And then got ready to moonsault Raven, but Chastity does a run in spraying. Bam Bam, he fell backwards through the table, and then Chastity does the turn on her brother, Raven, allowing you to pick up the victory.
That was Kevin Sullivan's idea.
So,
like, Nash is the booker, but Kevin Sullivan had, he was the agent for our match. Okay. And him being the agent said, this is the finish.
And that's
Literally, like, he gave us nothing except fucking her ball-shotting Raven and me covering him.
Okay.
Because Kevin knew he knew us, you know what I mean? He's not going to say, hey, do this, you know what I'm saying? He's not like that. Right. He's like, hey, guys, go out and do your thing. And I'm like, hey, are we under a time constraint? Because it's a pay-per-view, you know what I mean? Are we under a time constraint? He's like, well, try and keep it under 25. I'm like, and that's why I was like, then I really relaxed. You know what I mean? Then I know that there's no ref that's going to be telling us to take it home and stuff like that and be rushed, which is when you're usually always rushed in WWE or WWF, whatever it was then. You know what I mean? But there, and that's why the Mikey match went so long.
Yeah,
nobody had time constraints.
Yeah, you were able to go 14 minutes on the show. I thought it was a fun match.
It was 17.
Oh, okay.
Speaking of the ref, Hack, I noticed that he was completely basically obsolete the entire time until the finish.
Who?
The ref. But usually
just stay out of the way, dude.
But like usually now, you see like refs kind
of
like
they try to be part of the story, dude. Nobody's supposed to notice you ever until you're counting.
Well, that's it.
You know, she's calmed down a little.
Yeah. But the one thing, like I was saying, like you notice now, like at least like the ref will kind of like get the broken table out of the ring, like so you guys aren't doing. Like he wasn't even doing that. Like he literally.
I was gonna say, I told him, right? If we want to move something, we will. You step over it.
Right. That's why I. That's why I asked the question because I noticed he didn't.
The carnage of it. You know what I mean? It's kind of like I remember saying. It's like a car wreck. People are watching. If we keep moving stuff out and everything. Oh, and then the other thing was, it was super important for all three of us. That's why we never went outside of the ring. We did 17 minutes, let's say 15 minutes of wrestling time, and none of us went outside of the ring unless to go get a table. Right. It was three of us in the ring the whole damn time. Not, hey, me and Bigelow do a big spot, I roll out, then him and Raven do their stuff.
Right, yeah.
It was very important for us for all three to be in the ring the whole time. That's why I mean, and we thought blood would take away from it also. That's why we weren't doing stuff to the head and everything, you know what I mean? Because we thought the blood would take away from the way the boys looked at the match. And like, if all three of us are bleeding, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I want the work to show.
Okay. Overall, for a performance, rewatching it, it was your pay-per-view debut with WCW. Yeah, it was your pay-per-view debut for WCW. How would you rate your performance?
And he gets the win.
A 10.
10? Okay, yeah.
Oh, well, I was super happy.
Yeah.
Because I knew at that point that I was very equal to Kidman and Mikey right then. And I was not worried at all that anybody in the rest of the show would take our place in it.
Yeah. I mean, you guys delivered.
I'm happy.
Okay, awesome. Very happy. Yeah, no, I think you guys certainly delivered for that match. I know everybody always kind of looks back as Hardcore Hack and thinks, that WCW road. Listen, if you guys haven't watched it, go back and watch some Hardcore Hack matches. Hack, you certainly were in fantastic shape, and I think your performances during this time period were
some of your best work.
Physically looking, yes, because I started doing the steroids, you know. So I leave Paulie in September. I start doing the steroids the next week because I get hired by WCW September 9th or whatever. And then they don't use me till March 6th. So I was pumping every day, 4 hours a day with Scotty Brooks, who's actually one of the, what if you remember the What's Up guys? Yeah, he was my trainer. Him and Raven were friends from Philly. So that dude, the ball guy out of them, was my trainer for 6 months.
Okay.
I put on like 40 pounds of muscle.
Okay. Yeah, well, no, you certainly delivered, and I thought you really showed out.
A lot of juice, though.
Bonds over here.
But once I got there, I didn't have to do it. After my first night there, when I went out and called out Bigelow, I knew I didn't have to do the juice anymore.
Yeah,
because I knew I had their respect right there.
Okay,
I'm opening their show. They're saying I don't even know this dude's name, and they're giving me the microphone.
Yeah, no, I thought it was a fun match. You guys got second best match in the Wrestling Observer fan poll on the show, first going to Kidman and Whipwreck, but I thought for what you guys did on the pay-per-view, it certainly was a really
good would give Kidman and Whipwreck one also.
Yeah, okay, cool. And the other thing too, man, I don't know if you ever had a chance to interact with Bobby Heenan at all while you were in WCW. He really put you over. He said, what a tough guy this Hack is. I don't know if you had a chance to speak to Bobby at all.
Bobby, we talked, but a lot of guys really like me because the stories are around, like the Sandman, that beer drinking dude, that's him. And they're all like, damn, why didn't I do that in the 70s? You know what I mean? A lot of guys, you know what I mean? They're like, oh, they think I'm, that's cool to them. I'm like, they're Paul Newman.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because it's all the stuff that they would have loved to have done back then, but then I just got the chance.
Okay.
So, hey, Jim Ross, kind of the same way. Like, Jim, didn't we ride in the bus with him?
WrestleMania.
Yeah. And we Detroit. Got close with him, and he put me over. You know what I'm saying? Like, Jim Ross, he had always watched our stuff.
Okay.
But I didn't know it, I don't think, until that night that we're on the bus to go into the night before. Fame. Yeah, to the Hall of Fame. Our family sat together in the bus together.
That's really cool. Sometimes you don't know who's watching you or who likes you.
Everybody was watching us. I've come to realize that. Okay. Everybody was.
And stealing
from They all know about us.
Yeah.
Anybody that's in it, the 99% of the people that are in AEW or WWE know about ECW.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, no, these days, yes. Back then, a little more difficult to get your hands on, but...
You watch it, tapes and stuff like that. But yeah, all of them now. If you're a star now, you know, you've watched the shit.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And you've probably stolen something from it.
Yeah, now certainly.
Which makes me happy.
Yeah, fun match. I enjoyed it. Next up on the show was the tag team title lumberjack strap match. Boy, was this overbooked and just kind of fits the pattern of this pay-per-view, kind of a cluster. It was Chris Benoit and Dean Malenko versus Barry Windham and Curt Hennig. I thought Barry Windham really towered over Benoit Malenko in this one. You kind of like
Because Barry's like natural, like 6'2", and he wears 3-inch lifters in his boots, and Benoit Malenko 5'7".
Yeah, I mean, he really towered over them. Benoit went to town with chops, and Dean. Dean's work's always super solid. Windham hit a giant DDT, tagged in Curt Hennig. All the guys outside the ring with the straps. You had Arn Anderson come in as well early on with the Lumberjacks. This was just kind of a mess. You did have it went a little long, and then you had the belt a little bit trying to do that spot with Barry Windham in the corner. It looked like that was a botched spot where Windham was supposed to take a bump off of that and kind of like flipped without actually getting choked there. I don't know. I thought it was long, and Benoit had to jump super far for the headbutt. You got new tag team champions, but I think a straight match just between the two teams would have been better. I don't know what you thought
about that. It's the third match that was misbooked for failure. Why would you put your best workers on the show in a strap match after what we just did?
Yeah, following you guys.
Why? It was no booked sense. For failure. I'm not saying they're thinking, hey, let's book these guys for failure. I'm just saying that's the way it happened.
Yeah.
That's the third match that's straight up booked for failure.
Yeah, those guys, obviously, that's four really, really good workers in the ring. But, you know, with the gimmick constraints as well as just the everything in that match, I don't really like lumberjack matches that much to begin with. I've never been a really big fan of that as like a gimmick concept. I don't know about you guys.
It's just there's just too much that could go wrong. Too many moving parts. I mean, I don't know. Lumberjack matches don't. I mean, what do you?
Yeah, it's like what are you supposed to pay attention to? Like, what's the most important part of the match? Is it the guys outside? Is it the guys inside? Is it like,
yeah,
it's just a. Big cluster to me.
I've never cared for lumberjack matches, really. I couldn't recall any that like stand out in my mind as like, oh, no, you got to watch this match as a lumberjack match. This is a really good lumberjack match. It's just kind of as a concept gimmick. I'm not a fan of it overall. And
I mean, if you're a Sandman, an ECW fan, there is an extreme lumberjack match.
Oh, that's right.
With, what was it, Sabu and John Cena?
Oh, that's right.
And you had...
Yeah, back in WWE,
yeah, ECW. Some ECW lumberjacks and then some WWE lumberjacks.
Yeah, all right. If that's your number one seed for lumberjack matches all time,
I'm just saying if you're an ECW fan, Hack fan, you want to watch that match.
Well, I feel like if you're gonna do a lumberjack match, it kind of has to be that way, just because like you need to have like a faction like. Or all the lumberjacks have to be against an MWO like lumberjack match where it was all NWO guys outside the ring.
I'm trying to remember. I can't.
But I feel like that's the only way you can do it.
Set up sides. They would have the bad guy side and the good guy side.
So there has to be a clear line.
If you were tossing the baby face outside, you would toss him to the heel side,
right?
And if you were tossing the heel, you would toss him to the baby face side, I guess. But I don't know. The work in this match, like, you have Chris Benoit, you have Dean Malenko, you have Curt Hennig, Barry Windham.
They have no business being in a lumberjack match.
None. And it's for the tag team titles. Like, if you just were to book a straight match, or even if you booked something, you know, I don't know, a false count anywhere match, it would have been better without all the outside interference. The finish was Arn Anderson using the tire iron, which then caused the spot over in the corner with the belt, and Barry Windham, which he sold even though he didn't actually get pulled down by the belt. And then Benoit had to jump like three quarters across the ring for his diving headbutt. I don't know. This was a match where, you know, on paper, you're like, all right, Barry Windham, Curt Hennig, Chris Benoit, Dean Malenko. This should be a really good match. It wasn't. Nothing special at all. Completely forgettable. Hack, I don't know if you have any other thoughts on this match.
No, I'm good.
Yeah. All right. So that was that. New tag team champions there. Next up on the show was a dog collar match between Perry Saturn and Chris Jericho. Again, kind of like the theme for this show is for who, for what. I know you love that phrase, Hack, but this match was, man, I like both these workers a lot. I'm a big Chris Jericho fan. I'm a big Perry Saturn fan. This match wasn't it. There was a
why put him in a dog collar match? Perry can work his ass off. Chris can
it's
work.
It's uncensored. That's the. It's the gimmick match theme.
With an entire show of gimmick matches.
Which is why, unfortunately, the dog collar. What was it?
It was a dog collar match.
Yeah, good job, Ollie. I forgot that there had to be a gimmick, but. I don't know. Are they better off putting two lumbering Big John Studs in there in one of those matches? Than, you know what
something.
I mean,
look, this match was weird too because Jericho's on the way out here. It's March. I don't think he's given his notice yet, but you could tell by the work, like it just wasn't really that strong. Perry Saturn is working a gimmick where he's in a dress at this point. There was lots of chain spots, but the crowd wasn't really into it. I don't know. It didn't do much for me. Saturn picked up the victory after a win with the Death Valley Driver. Again, kind of a forgettable match. And I'm just imagining myself, back in 1999, if you paid money to watch this pay-per-view, besides the opener and Hacks match, and I guess the main event.
Oh, yeah, the main.
Yeah, but besides that, I mean, you got to be asking yourself, why did I buy this pay-per-view?
It's a shame to me because... You just watching Saturn and Jericho in a regular match would just be more than enough.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they're always...
And you could even do like a 2 out of 3 falls or a last man standing, and they could still get all their work in, and then, you know, you can do it some, you know...
Look.
It could be semi-gimmicky, but like, let them do what they do. Ben.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. Look, if you gave the four of us... you know, one night to book a show with this talent, I guarantee you we could come up with something better than what they put
out.
Dude,
there was another 80 dudes in the locker room that night that they flew everybody. That's what they would do. Dude, fly the whole roster in.
That's
guys that you wouldn't see ever. But they're there on pay-per-views. It was crazy.
That's insane that they would fly them in to do nothing. Like, I don't understand.
Brad Armstrong, they would fly him around for pay-per-views. I'd see them not work.
I mean, same thing happens in WWE. There's a bunch of workers. I mean, not to that extent.
The catering crew.
I counted over 75 people in a WWE locker room. When everybody gets together, when Johnny Ace would have his like big meeting, I would sit there and count everybody.
Okay.
75 people they'd be flying in, and not used more than like 27, maybe.
Yeah. No. They're really kind of a nothing match, so... next up on the show was Booker T and Scott Steiner. This was for the WCW TV title. Scott Steiner was in the NWO Wolfpack at this point. Buff Bagwell was seconding him with a freshly shaved ass, I think, after watching Dark Side of the Ring. You know, look, this match was all right.
It was interesting. There's a backstory there.
No, go ahead.
So, what is it?
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to get into it. It has something to do with when they asked Booker about after the Bagwell thing on the Dark Side, and something happened with Booker and Bagwell, and Big Papa Pump didn't want to sell for anybody ever.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But he sold for Booker.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, they had a lot of experience.
But Booker's a badass, too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, the Steiners in Harlem Heat had a number of matches and stuff. And,
yeah.
You know, Scott was on his full Big Papa Pump heel run here. Yeah. He's doing a lot of
and
Memphis
Booker's
stalling.
Like, hey, dude, I'm the next dude right now.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting seeing, like, when you go back and watch some of these WCW shows, seeing the rise of Booker T as a single star in 98, 99 on his come up into 2000. It didn't matter how much they pushed him. He was getting over with the crowd. The crowd wanted him to be at a higher level than he was pushed at. And this was kind of start of it. This match was, you know, it had decent work. The crowd was getting into it towards the end.
Yo, did you see how big Book was?
Book
was a little bigger than Papa.
And Big Papa Pump is, you know, at the point where he's big too. I mean,
well, Book's wearing some lifters also in his shoes too.
I love how you calling out the lifter guys. This is stuff like, you know, sometimes I
know all of them, dude. If I'm like Test, I would stand in the locker room with him in sneakers, like going to Arby's or something, and we're looking him in the eye. I got into the ring with him. I'm like, yo, dude, what are you doing up there? Seriously, they all do it.
Yeah, no,
inside and out. If they had some of them, like guys like Jericho would have like two on the outside and one on the inside, because Jericho's not a tall dude,
right? Yeah, well, it's a size.
I can't imagine trying to work on 3-inch heels like that. You know what I mean? Because I was in like ECW, there was like not many dudes taller than me.
Yeah.
No, you know, like Mustafa was right around my height. Maybe Big Sal was right around there. Al was a little bit. Al had the cowboy boots on and lifters too.
Wow. Exposing the business here, telling her all these lifters.
Yeah, the tricks of the trade. Yeah.
The tricks of the trade here with the lifters. Now, this match was it got a little decent towards the end. There was a goofy ref bump, but Booker picked up the W and got the TV title after using a chair. The crowd popped really big for this match, so I thought it was pretty good. Hack, what did you think?
No, I mean, for those two guys, it was better than I expected.
Okay. Next up on the show, this
politics.
Politics, yeah. Well, there's a lot of that going on in WCW in 1999. Next up on the show here was the main event. This was a First Blood barbed wire cage match for the presidency of WCW and the World Heavyweight title. Does that sound overbooked to you or what? So it was a First Blood match, but Flair goes on pre-match saying that he didn't want Robinson to stop the match due to a little cut, and this kind of like started up the heel turn in the match. So they do a double turn in this match as well. I mean, this was no WrestleMania 13 double turn. I don't know. Like, so you do the big, just to go over the booking for WCW at this point. You do the finger poke of doom in January. And about 2 months later, after doing that, you then turn Hogan babyface after putting all of that heat on him to avoid Goldberg and putting the belt on him. None of this makes any sense besides the fact that it's what they wanted to do. I kind of don't understand it. You take the belt right off Hogan after putting it on him just 2 months before that. You switch Flair from being a babyface to a heel. And he was always kind of fighting against the grain whenever he was a heel later on in his career because, you know, as good as his work was, he was always able to get the crowd to eventually turn against him. But he had already reached that legendary status point where no matter what, he's going to be a babyface at the end of the day. It doesn't matter what he does. And Flair certainly tried to pull out all the tricks in this match. You had a lot of interference. You had the slow ref counts by Charles Robinson. You had Arn Anderson slide the tire iron in for the finish. You know, it was solid work between Hogan and Flair. It was certainly cool to see them in a cage with some barbed wire, but not their best match that they ever had. Hack, I don't know what.
Dude, it was Hulk Hogan's best match he ever had to me.
But I think him and Flair had better matches before. And I think I've seen Hogan in better matches.
Well, considering the constraints in the cage, you know what I'm saying? It might be a little bit different with, you know, like Flair doing all his other bumps that he didn't do. The best part about the match to me was that just when you're a wrestler, you know, and you watch it and you just see that Flair is telling Hogan every single solitary thing to do in the ring. And you know how I know that? Because Flair will be laying on the mat. Hogan just gave him a big bump or something like that. Hogan would go over to pick him up by the head, and Flair would say, "Put me in the figure four." He'd stop right here and then just go around to the figure four. You know what I mean? Stuff like that. All right, let me spin this over. Now pick me up, throw me into the cage. You could just see Flair running the match, and it wasn't a typical Flair match, and it wasn't a typical Hogan match. I was very entertained, actually.
Okay, yeah. No, I mean,
watching that nowadays, I was entertained.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's not. I think they have
the celebrity of both of them. You know what I mean? Which means even more to me watching the match then in the beginning of the twilight of both of their careers.
Yeah, no, like. No matter what, those two guys could go out there and they could put on the Ric Flair Hulk Hogan match, and it's going to be really solid. I think they had previous work that was better, and the match was fun. But again, the booking to me was stuff that I can't ignore. Looking at it now, like I said, Flair's always been miscast as a heel later on in his career, and Hogan turning face again. I don't know, Ty. What are your
thoughts? I don't know, Hack. I was going to ask you. Do you think that it wasn't a typical Hogan Flair match because of A, the type of match that it was, and B, they were kind of doing the double turn, so it's like it's hard for Flair to do like his typical stuff if he's turning a certain way? Do you feel like that?
Watching it, I didn't care about the double turn or whatever. I was way more interested, like maybe back then I would have been more interested in it, but I was more just like watching the work between those two right then. I didn't care about the turn thing. Well, you know what I mean? Okay. I want to see the work.
Well, yeah, I was just asking more or less.
Because there was no huge baby in the match. Well, no huge heel in the match.
Do you think they weren't doing their typical spots because it was a heel turn?
Well, maybe the Flair flip bump, you know what I mean, with the cage, you know, where he'll go to shoot you, you reverse it, he goes into the corner, ducks, flips, runs along the apron, goes to the top rope, you give him a bump off the top rope. You didn't see any of that. I don't know if it's because of the cage, but who knows. What was the question?
No, I was just seeing if like him turning, you know, baby heel, baby, whatever. Yeah,
I didn't care about the baby heel thing. I was just watching the art of art of the match.
Cool. Yeah, no, look, it was a fun match. I would go about 3 stars for the match, but Flair picked up the victory there to become world champion once again. Oliver, I'm going to hit you with a hack check here. What did that make Ric Flair champion at this point in time?
That was 22-time champion.
Wow. So Flair wins the belt in 99, and that's the official count. It's the 22nd time that he won the world title. That's crazy, man. That's certainly interesting.
Well, wasn't...
I thought they said 17.
Well, see, there's two different numbers out there. There's the official number, and then there's the number that WWE or wrestling people put out.
Ooh,
Flair. Yeah, so that's the 22nd time at that point. I'm not sure where it's...
Does that include all his, like, NWA titles and all that?
It includes all the times he dropped it, like, in Puerto Rico for whatever reason.
Oh, for one day here and there.
Yeah, a lot of those are not official.
That nobody even knew back then.
Right.
No
right,
internet, so I guess, no nothing.
So I guess, like, the 16 or 17, whatever it is, I guess, just what WCW, recognize. WWE, whatever
that's
they recognize.
The recognize, but the real number's even higher. So, right, like, Flair... Nobody's catching Flair ever for people out there thinking
that's funny.
Catch
I never even knew that.
Yeah, yeah. All right. So that's a little. That's
but for
little.
Recognized, who is the closest to catching him?
You know, well, it's got to be Cena
and Randy,
Cena's,
right?
Cena's one behind, I'm pretty sure. Yeah,
is it Randy fucking right
Randy's
where there
very
with
close.
Cena?
Yes. Very close. Yes.
Are they tied?
Well, no, I think Randy is.
I'm calling next year's WrestleMania.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Cena's one behind, and Randy might be like one or two behind him. But Cena, apparently Cena didn't want to tie Rick. Like they were trying to put the belt back on him.
No,
and he was
wanted
like,
to pop in and pop out. You know what I mean? Let me get my movie money up a little bit by popping in.
It's just so interesting to me that like they were trying to put Ric Flair out to pasture back in 1989. It was going to be like that was his final run.
That's what Vince, they went through it in a documentary where Vince said, I'll give you all this money for... Oh, no, that was Bret Hart, sorry.
Okay, all right.
Well, yeah, Terry Funk had like 10 retirement matches, so...
Yeah, well, that's Uncensored 1999. Certainly an interesting show. I would say check it out, maybe do a little fast-forwarding on it if you're watching it. I think there's probably
a lot of fast-forwarding.
A lot of fast-forwarding, but definitely check out the Mikey Whipwreck, Billy Kidman match, the Hack 3-Way with Raven and Bam Bam.
1, 3, and 8.
Yeah, 1, 3, and 8. That's all.
I think that's what it is. You could or no, maybe 1, 4.
Go to the bathroom in between the rest of them.
Go to the bathroom, run some errands, and come back and watch the main event after Axe match.
Yeah.
We have some listener questions here, but before we do, I know we want to talk about what Hack's up to WrestleMania weekend, Ty. Do you have that available so we can make sure where to check out Hack all WrestleMania weekend? I know you're going to be doing WrestleCon. You got a number of shows booked as well. It's going to be a jam-packed weekend. If you see any of us WrestleMania weekend, definitely say hi, say what's up. I'll be glad to share any photos on social media as well. So don't hesitate. Hack's not very shy at all. We're all big fans of all of our fans out there. So definitely make sure to, you know, say, hey, listen to the pod. I've been following on social, so give us a shout if you're there, because we definitely want to make sure that we're taking care of our fans. And as always, you can send listener questions to sammanpod@gmail.com, as always. So if you do have anything, let us know. I have the questions. Ty, we got that up yet?
Yeah.
Okay. Kevin.
So... there's a convention at the Sheraton, it is, Hack, right? The Sheraton down down in the city.
This is your stuff, kid.
Right, on 17th Street down in the city. It is...
17th and like Cherry.
Okay. Right. And it is Friday, Saturday, Sunday, all 9 a.m. to 2 p.m.
Okay.
Friday night, you'll be at the ECW Arena for a show. Now called the 2300 Arena, and
good save.
Well, no, I wanted to give the ECW Arena credit.
2300.
But also
arena.
Now, for if people are looking to show up there now, give it its name now.
Facts.
Right. So, and then Saturday we will. Friday, Saturday, Sunday convention 9 to 2.
Swanson and Rittner.
Friday night at ECW Arena, 2300 Arena. So. For one of the shows, I don't know the promoter or whoever it is for Friday night, but yep.
Cool. We'll also be promoting those on our social media accounts. So if you want to check out anything Sandman related, just be sure to follow us.
And then I'm going to do something on for Bubba. Bubba's doing for his XM radio.
Okay, bust it open.
Yeah, but what when's that time?
Yeah, that's
is that Friday
so that's,
afternoon.
So that's Saturday afternoon.
Saturday afternoon at like 1-ish.
Noon to 1 or something.
We're gonna dial it in later, right?
Well, yeah, I wasn't sure if you were gonna be a surprise or not, so I didn't mention that. Right. But well, cat's out of the bag now.
Dude,
so
wait a minute. Oh wow.
Well, we have the magic of editing here.
Shut up.
All right, we have the magic of editing here, so we might have to pull some of this stuff, and I'll just go to listener questions.
Yeah, Ty, do some editing.
Listener questions, as always, please send into sammanpod@gmail.com. First up, Chris W. from New Jersey writes in, any memories of the strip club you owned in Delaware?
Actually, Felix was there at the what was the name?
Delilah's.
At Delilah's last Tuesday or Wednesday, whatever it was.
Who's Felix for
Felix,
the people?
Was the guy that I was a partner with that opened up Hack Strip Club in Delaware.
You know what's so funny?
He came up and gave me a big hug.
You know what's so funny?
It's good to see him.
I literally said this to Oliver. We're standing in the back. I was like, yo, dude, this guy just went up to Hack and is talking to him about the club that they owned together in Delaware. And I see him.
How did you know that?
Because I saw him talk to you.
So you were lip reading?
We're like not that far away from you. We're about this far distance, but it's...
Oh, I thought you guys were upstairs.
No, we're still downstairs at this point. And I was like, because I had asked you earlier in the night, because a buddy of mine brought it up to me that you owned a club. I never knew you owned a club. And then I was talking to Ty about there was a wrestling school as well with this club. So
yeah, the Pitbulls running it, because I was on the road a lot. So Gary was running it back there.
And Ty apparently training too. Locking up and helping out there. So,
yeah, I was a trainer. Well, it wasn't originally a strip club. It was just a bar / restaurant.
We opened it. We built a strip club inside a warehouse because the only zoning for it, Felix was super smart, what the zoning for was in like industrial areas. He was the guy that was like, he's the guy that figured it out. He's like, oh, dude, I could slip a strip club in under these ordinances. And we built the whole bar, everything.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Stripping and wrestling. Stripping. Two for one.
Two for one.
Kind of one in the same.
There's a lot of performance
I didn't even
aspects.
Like being there.
Nah, you didn't care.
Nah.
Okay. Trevor N. from Newtown Square writes in, if you had to cook one meal on a cooking show, what would your signature dish be?
All right, Bobby Flay, here we
go. Liverwurst.
Wow, no, liverwurst. Oh,
no, you don't cook liverwurst. Liver and onions, though, is a good one.
Liver
a little
and
bit
onions?
Off the cuff.
I mean, guys, what is, like, if Hack ever cooks
a
dinner for you guys?
No, I'm a Thanksgiving guy. I can do, like, everything. I can cook a Thanksgiving dinner easily.
Okay, so that's, you're going full Thanksgiving. What would you guys say is Hack's best meal that he cooks? You
mac and cheese that I buy from Stouffer's. I just took it out of the oven like 10 minutes ago.
Yeah, I mean, he's not, as you would imagine, he's not your full-blown...
As inept as possible. Dude, I love it. And I dominate the barbecue, too, outside.
Okay, so he's a barbecue grill guy.
That's kind of a set-it-and-forget-it type deal, and a lot of times it's forgetting it, but...
Yeah, Ty's like, I turned your shit off downstairs, Hack, while I'm upstairs watching something stupid.
He's pretty good. He's pretty good, you know, your meats, you know, your steaks, your chickens, your whatever, like... Barbecue stuff like that, seafood, shellfish, pretty good. I mean, as baby steps and simple as you can get.
No seasonings, no nothing.
I would say chicken and dumplings he makes isn't bad when you're not picking the bones out. Right.
Okay. All right. So those that answers your question, Trevor. Those are the signature dishes of Hack if he's ever on Chopped or Beat Bobby Flay. That's what he's going to be with.
Kevin.
All right. Will D. from New York City writes in, did you ever hear if Metallica was aware of your entrance? With it having such a cult following, I'm interested to hear if they ever caught wind of it.
Yeah, I'm over huge with them.
No, but for real? Like, I mean, Lars.
Huge fans, yeah.
That means I have no clue.
Huh?
You have no.
Okay, you've never heard anything regarding that. Okay.
Well, yeah, and I guess WWE wasn't even trying to get the rights for them for your music, but Triple H, they
hated fucking Vince. Because
didn't they perform at WrestleMania for like Triple H's entrance or something?
You know, I think they
maybe
might
years
have.
Later.
No, that's Motorhead. Motorhead. Triple H.
That's what I'm thinking. But I could have sworn Metallica performed.
Metallica wanted to play on, wanted to do something at WrestleMania, and this is what Tommy Dreamer told me. That's why they couldn't use my music because back then they were buying other people's music. And Vince was like, who the hell's Metallica? And then they were like, nope.
Yeah.
So, they tried to.
Thanks
years
a lot,
later.
Vince.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks a lot. All right.
Kevin!
This question is from our favorite listener, Kevin from Dayton, Ohio, unfortunately.
Kevin, hey, Francine's been listening. She loves you. You're the favorite call in.
Sorry about your Dayton Flyers, Kevin.
Yeah, you lost to Arizona after we recorded this. You guys were able to get by Nevada in the pool, but unfortunately you went down to Arizona. Sorry for your loss there, Kevin.
But I think it's more successful now that you know that Francine's a fan of yours.
Yeah, the
so
queen
that,
of extreme. Forget about the Flyers.
Yeah,
we're talking about
Kevin, you're on your way up right now, dude.
Yeah, you're getting over, Kev. So appreciate Francine being a fan of your questions as well. You really asked some good stuff. But here's his question this week. Kevin from Dayton, Ohio writes in, what is your biggest career regret? Long dramatic pause.
Not being able to tolerate the people in WWE.
Okay, so you're saying...
I just couldn't do it. I can't go to work and have these inane conversations with 30 different people. None of them I really even know. All of them are lying to you at some point. You know what I'm saying? Everybody's like, hey, is this dude here to take my spot? Like, there's so much bull crap that goes on back there. And I was an outsider, and I'm used to like family stuff, ECW and everything. You know what I mean? So, my biggest regret is my intolerance.
So I guess you're saying like navigating the politics and the day-to-day grind.
I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, if Todd Gordon was there, I would have been great.
All right, well,
Todd. Right, and you just want it, like, you're saying, like, and then you probably would have hung on like more years in your career at, with WWE than you ultimately just, ended up doing because you just had to leave.
It was so hard going on the road. And all I did was TVs after a while. I did house shows for a month, and I'm like, Johnny, I can't do this. He goes, you just want to do TVs and pay-per-views? I'm like, yeah. He's like, okay.
Oh, such a hard life, you know? Yeah. There's just those TVs and pay-per-views. But I hated
being there. You got, especially a pay-per-view day. Oh, my God.
What well, especially diva. After you got moved from ECW to Raw.
Done. And then done. You have, done. You have asked nobody. For my release. Done. Then he took the beer away from me. Done. Asked for my release.
Yeah.
No, and then just made it happen.
Well, yeah, you asked for your release a couple times, and they told you no a couple times.
Well, Johnny's like, no, just please. He gave me a raise the one time. That was
so
the
he's
first,
like, well, I might as well keep asking.
Yeah, but it was
a
only $25,000 raise, and I was making more that year. I think I made like $300, and I worked like 30 times or something ridiculous.
Wow.
Well, because you got to understand, there was 75,000 was the video game, and 40,000, 38,500 was WrestleMania that one year.
How was your payoff for Mania?
Yeah, eight wow. of us.
With eight dudes in the match, too.
That's so. Crazy.
But we were five out of eight.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So you're up the pay scale, you know what I'm saying? And five guys at 40, eight guys at 40 apiece is $320,000 for that match.
Wow.
Bobby Lashley got paid $500,000 for the main event where where Vince got his head shaved. Yeah. Complained he got fired.
Wow.
Complained he got fired. He got paid $500,000 and complained.
Well, I mean, it was one of their biggest WrestleManias of all time. Like so,
83,005 people, something like that.
Yeah, it's just an insane crowd. We'll have to talk about that at some point. So that's what we have. Oh, wait. Actually, Cane of the Week, Toast of the Week. Hack, who's the Cane of the Week?
Why is every week?
I'm like, sorry. I forgot this week. I apologize. Cane of the Week.
Kevin throws us off a little bit. Yeah, you know, he's got this off. Great question.
All right, first, Kevin! Dude. Cane of the Week is going to TD Bank. I've been going there since 1994. I pull up there yesterday. Nobody says hello to me or anything. I you know, you send you put your stuff in that tube. It goes in the tube. Boom. Goes to a guy. Usually when they get it, they say, hey, hello, sir, something. Don't hear nothing for 5 minutes. Then the guy gets on it. The first thing he says to me, he goes, check your text out. I sent you something. I'm like, what? This guy's in the customer service business. The only words he ever, the first words he said to me were after 5 minutes were, check your text out. And then I go into, I've been here since 1994 with TD.
When text messages didn't even exist. I was using my transistor radio.
And then I lost my mind. And the guy, instead of being like a customer service guy, well, sir, I'm sorry, but this is a new policy that we have. The government's making us do this. We'll do it. We apologize for the inconvenience. Instead, he goes, yo, dude, it's not 1994 anymore. I lost it.
Oh, I would have lost it, too.
Did he actually get caned? Did he cane somebody in a TV
yeah, literally. So yeah. I start reaming the dude, and I cursed or something, and then the lady came over as the manager, and I undressed her, too. I said, did you listen to this conversation? She goes, yeah. I said, what was the first words he said to me? And she said those words. I'm like, wouldn't you think it's customer service you might have said hello first? She's like, yeah, you're right. You know what I mean? She was right there because he's on a speaker system in there, and she's not far from him, right around the corner. So I undressed her, and then the dude got even more cocky. He goes, do you want your money back? I'm like, yeah, give me my money back.
All right, that's a great
drove away and then got screwed. Went to the other TD Bank and I was there 2 minutes late. They closed at 2 o'clock. Then I was really hot.
So you're the TD spaz I saw on the news.
Then I was really hot.
Look out for NBC 10. Hack.
My toast of the week's going to Mikey Whipwreck for that match, dude.
Toast of the week to you, Mikey.
Dude, that match was so great for him at that time. For him and his career. That was real, even though he didn't do much there, but he got paid good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And afterwards, it really showed his like brilliance in the ring there.
Nah, well, coming up next week, we are going to be recapping the WrestleMania weekend and all the events, both night one and night two. Can't wait to discuss that with you guys here on the podcast. As always, hit that heart. We know you like it, and we will talk to you next week. Take care.